Thank you, Rosemary. And I'll take this opportunity to thank you, Grace, for beautiful piano playing. It's lovely to have you back with us. A word to those of you who don't know me, just why I'm sitting down and not standing up when I should be. I've got two problems, and one is my knees, which some of you understand, and I also suffer from a kind of dizziness when I stand up. So it's a bad combination. And as I thought about this, I realized I can push a cart around Costco. So if I can do that, I can stand here and speak to you this morning and share with you some of the wisdom, the book of Proverbs. Oh, is that better? Thank you. My father-in-law had all kinds of apt sayings for every occasion, and he used to say that the head can't take in more than the seat of the pants can endure. I thought you'd appreciate that. Well, in this case, the mouth can't say more than the knees can hold up. So, just a word of prayer. Set a guard over my mouth, O Lord. Keep watch over the door of my lips. And may the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable to you, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer. And this summer we're going to look at various sections from the book of Proverbs. It's not put together in any kind of orderly way, at least after the chapter 10 it's not. And so we'll be having selected verses, and different people will be speaking each Sunday, but I got allotted to this Sunday. The origin of these proverbs is, some of them may go back centuries before Solomon even pulled them together. Other countries of the ancient Near East also, particularly in Egypt, there were wise men who put things into memorable phrases repeatable phrases that one would remember. And it was Solomon, the son of David, who reputedly collected them together and put together, it says in the book of Kings, that over 1,000 proverbs. We just have some of them here. So he may have just have collected them. They're called the Proverbs of Solomon, but he was probably the one who collected them and put them together. And part of the background of that is that the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream, and God said to him, "Ask what I should give you." And he asked for wisdom. And that pleased God, that he hadn't chosen wealth or a fine reputation or a big empire or anything like that. He'd asked for wisdom, and so God gave him wisdom and other things as well. And then we're told, and this is from 1 Kings, I love this, that he composed, it says 3,000, well, we've only got 300 here, so. And his songs numbered 1,005. And then, listen to this, he would speak of trees, from the cedar that is in the Lebanon to the hyssop that grows in the wall, and he would speak of animals and birds and reptiles and fish. People came from all the nations to hear the wisdom of Solomon, and they came from all the kings of the earth who had heard of his wisdom. That he paid attention to the details of creation, and it was out of that that he gained his wisdom. So Solomon collected all of these together, and we are divvying them up in this sermon series. Well, one of them says that death and life are in the power of the tongue. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. And in the New Testament, we have Jesus' brother, James, elaborating on that in some detail, and I just want to read you a bit of what James had to say. There's an irony in all of this which you won't miss as I read. Not many of you should become teachers, my brothers and sisters, for you know that we who teach will be judged with greater strictness, for all of us make many mistakes. Anyone who makes no mistakes in speaking is perfect, able to keep the whole body in check with a bridle. If we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we guide their whole bodies. Or look at ships. Though they are so large that it takes strong winds to drive them, and yet they are guided by a very small rudder wherever the will of the pilot directs. So also is the tongue. It is a small member, and yet it boasts of great exploits. Now this next bit, we in Saskatchewan should be able to understand. How great a forest is set ablaze by a small fire. And the tongue is a fire. The tongue is placed among our members as a world of iniquity. It stains the whole body, sets on fire the cycle of nature, and is itself set on fire by hell. For every species of beast and bird, of reptile and sea creature can be tamed and has been tamed by the human species. But no one can tame the tongue, a restless evil full of deadly poison. With it, we bless the Lord and Father, and with it, we curse those who are made in the likeness of God. From the same mouth come blessing and cursing. My brothers and sisters, this ought not to be so. Serious stuff. There's all kinds of ways that we use our tongues, I mean, other than eating, but in speaking, different kinds of speech. Begin at perhaps the lowest kind of speech, trivia. An example of that, I caught myself talking to the fridge the other day. I think I said, well, what is in there here that I can eat for supper? Absolute trivia, and we use our tongues for that. There's ordinary conversation when we talk to one another all the time. There's chit-chat. There's meaningless or not very important, serious conversation. And I have to say that that's one of the things I miss the most with Reed now that he's not with us. Just the opportunity to say absolutely trivial things. And there is structured speech. For years I was a lecturer at the university, and you had to fit what you were going to say into 50 minutes. Don't worry, I'm not going to be 50 minutes. My knees won't let me. But the lecturing, that's speech that's organized. That's not just conversation. Recently I was asked by, there's an organization called the Word Guild, which gives awards to excellent Christian writing in Canada. If any of you are writers, you can submit your work to the Word Guild. But I was asked to be a judge for the Word Guild. And they gave us a template for how we should report our judgment of the books that were put in front of us. And it was something I'll remember. First of all, begin by saying something nice. Find something really nice to say about the books. And I must say, the ones I was sent, that wasn't hard. Then just write about the book, what you think about it. And end with constructive criticism, something nice that will leave the writer something to think about as they continue writing. Nice structure. Then there's meaningful conversation as opposed to the chit-chat conversation. Recently, I was eating my breakfast and the phone rang. And it was someone I had not seen for years and years. Maybe some of you know T.V. Thomas. It was T.V. Thomas on the phone and saying he had someone with him who I'd known years and years ago, and could they come and see us? And I said, well, of course. And he said, in the next 10 minutes? I said, sure. And so they showed up, and we had just a wonderful time together. That was really meaningful conversation. And in the course of it, Chris Miller, I don't know whether any of you remember Chris, who was with TV at the time, said to me, what feeds you spiritually? And I, without missing a beat, I had the answer to that. Friendship. And when I said that, I was thinking of you people. Friends. What feeds you spiritually? Friendship. That's a good question. Occasionally we may be asked to bear witness to something we've seen. That's another kind of speech. And there's now. And it was painful preparing this, even more painful when I found out my children were going to be here. Because I'm using speech now, I'm doing what I'm talking about, and with the warnings of how the tongue can be used badly, I was very self-conscious as I was preparing this and well aware of the irony. And it's not just the words out of our mouths that we're talking about here. All of it applies equally well to what we write and what we text and what we communicate using words. And Proverbs has something to say about all of these. And I picked out some main categories here. It has something to say about chit-chat or thoughtless speech. The babbling mouth of a fool brings ruin near. Or as someone else has translated it, if you talk like a fool, you'll soon be ruined. Trouble is near. Know-it-alls talk too much, a sheer waste. It invites disaster. One of the main contrasts in Proverbs is between the wise person and the fool. And often it comes out in the way that people speak. Jesus said as much. He said, how can you speak good things when you are evil? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. The good person brings good things out of a good treasure, and the evil person brings evil things out of an evil treasure. I tell you, on the day of judgment, you will have to give account for every careless word you utter. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. It's serious stuff. So, chit-chat, thoughtless speech, we need to be careful when we're just talking and not thinking about what we're saying. Second one is gossip. Here, Solomon had a very expressive phrase. The words of a whisperer or someone who gossips are like delicious morsels. The words of a whisperer are like delicious morsels. They go down into the inner parts of the body. In other words, they're juicy. We talk about gossip being juicy. And we like it when people share secrets or share gossip with us. It draws us close to them. And it makes us feel we're an insider too. And it's very easy when we're told a piece of gossip then to think, who can I tell about that? Fancy that. And in my experience, gossip has a propensity to gather more detail. Every time it gets repeated, it's juicier than it was before. And another verse from Proverbs, a gossip goes about telling secrets, but one who is trustworthy in spirit keeps a confidence. And this is how Eugene Peterson in The Message translates it. Gossips can't keep secrets, so never confide in blabbermouths. And I was thinking about this one and how it applies particularly to social media, and worse still, to bullying. And as Christians, we should stop it before it starts. We should call people out. If they pass on something that is just sheer gossip, we should call them out. And perhaps counter it by saying something good about the person in question. Thirdly, Proverbs speaks about lying and slander. And I was thinking that if Solomon had spoken English, he would have much more to work with, because we have lots of words for that. What about, we talk about prevaricating, which means sort of avoiding the truth and telling half a truth but not telling the whole truth, or just avoiding the truth. Or a fib, we can tell a fib. And a fib is a lie that isn't really bad. And I was trying to think of examples of fibs. Someone said she would water the plants while her mother was away. Well, that was a fib. She never watered the plants. It's a fib is a childish lie. And there are times we all find ourselves in where to actually tell the whole truth would hurt somebody. And so we say, well, you really look good in that. It's not altogether true. And so there are times when these pithy sayings in Proverbs collide with another principle that we should be kind to one another. So saying you look terrible in that dress, don't ever wear that color again, you might be thinking that, but it wouldn't be a very Christian thing to say to somebody, because we are commanded to be kind to one another. But a fib, we need to be careful about when we tell a fib. It's a lie that we don't think is important, but perhaps we can avoid saying it. I was interested in thinking about, this is a recent phenomenon in our language, and it was Kellyanne Conway. Do you remember? It came in the context of when our orange face to the south was boasting about the number of people who were present at his inauguration. And it wasn't true. There were more people at Obama's inauguration. And Kellyanne Conway, his advisor, talking to the press, said, well, there are alternative facts. That's a new kind of lie, which Solomon doesn't mention. Alternative facts. In contrast with that, Jesus said he was the truth. Lying lips are an abomination to the Lord. And coming to what we would call lies, I think, well, I don't do that. Oh. How many times have I lied to get out of trouble? This is a thing that children do all the time. I didn't touch it. Not true. As an adult, do I do a similar thing to that, to get myself out of some kind of trouble? Or to make myself look good? Do I exaggerate? And it didn't take me, I won't share them with you, but it didn't take me long to think of examples where The story is just better if you up the numbers a bit or increase the difficulties or whatever it was. Just exaggerating, because I look better if I exaggerate. But slander, that Proverbs talks about, is even worse. The dictionary says, I looked this up to find what exactly slander is, and it's making a false statement about another person with the intent of harming their reputation by telling something that's both untrue and damaging about them. And libel is a printed version of that. So the law makes a difference between slander and libel. But God hates that kind of speech from our mouths. Now, maybe we don't often do this, but again, I think about social media, where we can hide behind anonymity and say something really unkind. And particularly if there's a chain of comments like this, just to chime in with your bit and add to it, that's not hard to do. And it gets worse when it comes to bullying and the harm we all know that that can do. And again, like gossip, I think the thing to do is when we see other people doing that, to call them out. It takes some courage, and you're taking a stand against what is popular around you, but call people out if they do that. The fourth thing that Proverbs talks about, to do with how we use our words, our mouths, is failure to listen first. It actually mentions that. That's so contemporary. If one gives an answer before hearing, it is folly and shame. I like to listen to the program on CBC on Saturday mornings. It's called The House, where Catherine Cullen interviews people about what's been going on in Ottawa. And recently, on one program, she had a whole number of politicians and asked them, what was the best piece of advice you were ever given? And there were all kinds of different answers to that. But it was Erin O'Toole who said that his father had said to him, you have two ears and one mouth. Listen twice as much as you speak. He said that was the most important thing he'd ever been told. And then there's rebuke. And perhaps we're not clear about exactly what we mean when we talk about rebuke. And Joel and I were having a discussion about this, and he talked about frying eggs. And he said that one time he had been frying eggs, or was it Heather was frying eggs, and he criticized her for doing it wrong. And her response to him is, there you are. And it was funny when he told me that, because Reed had exactly the same discussion with his mother. He didn't like eggs that were fried around the edges, as he put it. And she was frying eggs, and he said, did exactly the same thing. Her response was, there you go, you do it. That's criticism, that's not rebuke. And I don't think Proverbs has much to say about criticism. But it does have something to say about rebuke, which is much more serious, and I don't think we do it very often. And I want to suggest that there's a possibility that we should maybe do it more often than we do, but it needs to be done with great wisdom. If we have a close friend, someone we trust who knows that that they trust us, and there's something in their lives that we know is wrong, and it's not just a one event, not just like once frying an egg, but something that is seriously wrong. There is a time to bring that up and talk about it. It needs to be done with a great deal of wisdom and humility, but I think there is a place for rebuke. And Proverbs says that it's like a gold ring or an ornament of gold, a wise rebuke to a listening ear. And we might want to think about that. Do we know how to do it? Do we know that we have our friends' trust and that they care about us? And I can think of a couple of times when somebody has rebuked me. I can't remember what it was that I was doing, but someone told me that that's not good. And I really, really appreciated it. I think our instinct is to fight back immediately. But we'll go away and think about it. There's a place for rebuke if it's carefully done, well done, with someone we trust and someone we love. And I've appreciated the times when I have been rebuked. Another way we can use our mouths is revenge. And Proverbs says, do not say, I will do to others as they have done to me, I'll pay them back for what they have done. Do not say, I will repay evil. Wait for the Lord, and he will help you. And that makes me think of David in the Old Testament. And when he was running away from the king, Saul, who was out for his life, and on more than one occasion, David had the opportunity to kill him. He caught him in a cave, and Saul was in the back of the cave, and David could have put his sword through him at that moment, but he didn't. What he did was to tell it to God in the Psalms. And if you think the Psalms are pretty full of evil and attack on other people and people complaining that they're being persecuted, this is how David poured his heart out. He didn't try and suppress it, he dealt with it, but he dealt with it by taking it to God, who took it in his own hands. Do not say, I will repay evil. Wait for the Lord and he will help you. Leave it to God. And then, on top of all of those things, there are all the pleasant ways in which we can use our tongue. There's less in that in Proverbs than there is about damaging ways we can use our tongues. And Cheryl very beautifully took the example of a honeycomb, because Proverbs says, an apt word, how pleasant it is. It's like honeycomb. To make an apt answer is a joy to anyone. And a word in season, how good it is. A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in a setting of silver. Pleasant words are like a honeycomb. Sweetness to the soul and health to the body. And a soft answer turns away wrath. And I was thinking about how Jesus used words. How apt his words are. How what he said was tuned to the person he was speaking to. To the woman who was caught in adultery, he asked of her accusers, who thought they had the right to stone her according to the Old Testament law, let him who is without sin among you cast the first stone. And they all slunk away until she was left alone, face to face with Jesus. And he said, woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you? And she said, no one, sir. And Jesus said, neither do I condemn you. Go away, and from now on, do not sin again. I think of the people putting their offerings into the treasury at the temple, some of them in a showy way, putting in a lot of money. And there was the widow who had so little and put in what she had. And he said to everybody else, "Truly I tell you, this poor widow has put in more than all of them. But all of them have contributed out of their abundance. But she, out of her poverty, has put in all she had to live on." He was not always meek and mild. He could be quite biting. To the Pharisees, he told the those who, in the temple courts who were selling, making a profit out of what they could sell that people would buy to offer in the temple. And he poured out the coins of the money changers and overturned their tables and said to those who were selling doves, "Take these things out of here. Stop making my father's house a marketplace." But he's speaking to different people there than he was speaking to with the two women I mentioned just now. And he said, "I tell you, on the day of judgment, you will have to give account for every careless word you utter. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned." Serious stuff. And then he was silent before his accusers. This is not using your tongue. Now Jesus stood before the governor, and the governor asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And Jesus said, "You have said so. That's what you say." But when he was accused by the chief priests and the elders, he did not answer. And then Pilate said to him, "Do you not hear how many accusations they make against you?" But he gave them no answer, not even to a single charge, so that the governor was greatly amazed. Have you ever heard Jesus speaking to you? I have. And I've heard him rebuke me. I can't remember what the issue was. But suddenly I knew that something I was doing was not right. And I knew it was Jesus saying, "Don't do that." And then, quite recently, I've heard his word of comfort. Every Monday to Thursday, I'm at the early morning prayer time on Zoom. And then I started to make, I'll tell you what happened. What I used to do after that was spend some time with my own Bible reading and prayer before I started the day. And one morning, just a few weeks ago, we'd finished the time together on Zoom, and I was about to open my Bible and do what I usually did, and I was stopped. And I could hear Jesus saying, "Don't do that. Just be quiet." And I was stopped in my tracks. And this is Jesus telling me not to open my Bible. Yes, because he said, "I want to comfort you." And so ever since then, at the end of the prayer time that we have together over Zoom, I've just put everything down and just sat quietly, just 5 minutes, just to be open to whatever he may have to say to me. That's become very meaningful. So, pulling all of this together, I've come away thinking that Proverbs is much more than an opportunity to reflect on nuggets of practical wisdom. because our words reflect who we are. When we speak, it bears witness to what's going on in our minds, and that bears witness to who we are. And so when we think about this, when we read Proverbs, it's a chance to reflect on what our life is all about and to ask ourselves, is Jesus Christ at the center of my life? We couldn't ask a more important question. Thank you.